happening, Cape Town? It's a girl, B.
This is Black Coffee.
What up, wait, my fair to this is Kabelo, a.k.a. Mr. Booger Two Shoes.
Bush Radio, the station with the best music. 89.5 FM.
Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Community Champions on Bush Radio 89.5 FM. Please send your comments, questions and messages to Bush Radio's WhatsApp number 061-862-1065. We've got a team in the studio here. Thomas Cedric from Bush Radio, Reese Adams and Basir Dramat. Three sound engineers working with me. I'm really, really very much indebted to them for all the effort that they're making to help us to get the best quality sound with regard to this interview that we're conducting with Kumi Naidu all the way from Berlin. Now, there are some rare things in life that enriches life beyond what we could ever imagine. Our challenge tonight is going to get enough of a snapshot of Kumi's life that will leave you enriched and inspired by this remarkable man. He's absolutely one of a kind who's equally at home, as you would have heard, in the global corridors of power, as he is hanging out with the Revolution Motorcycle Club in Chatsworth. The next questions I want to ask you, Kumi, and I'm going to set different scenarios, is what makes you happiest? And that is a very broad question, so I'm going to pin it down to a couple of images, and I want you to chat just a little bit about each one of it. Okay, let's go.
Okay, no. Before you do that, can I just say about that beautiful Mafi Kisolo song that many people want? People remember Mafi Kisolo today as the duo of Tio and Pantla, but I just want to use this opportunity to pay tribute to Tipo Ko, the third member of the group that was killed in 2004, but also to pay tribute to two people who influenced me and many activists, one from Cape Town who just left, Uzu was in Cape Town but passed away a few days ago, and that's Ibrahim Ibi Ismail. And another amazing gentleman from Durban called Swaminathan Gowden. These two folks played a major role in inspiring me and many young activists in the 70s and 80s. So I'd like to just pay tribute to them and to Boko from Mafi Kisolo. Can I just say that I had an opportunity to meet Mafi Kisolo, and I was like a 15-year-old kid. I got so nervous, I couldn't get a word out when they came to play at the Amnesty International Global Conference in Joburg. But anyway, so what makes me happy?
Yeah,
and you were about to narrow it down for me.
I've got a couple of things that I want you to focus on. But thank you for those tributes, Kumi, and thank you for linking it back to, you know, the you would have ticked off something on your bucket list, which I haven't yet, and that is to meet Mafi Kisolo. So I'm a little bit envious. That would make me happy. That would make me happy, because, you know, I'm a big fan. I'll probably put my head in the speaker. But tonight's not about me. Tonight's about you. So, knowing you, one of the things I know that makes you happy or that made you happy was when you mounted Kilimanjaro. Tell us about that.
So my elder sister, Kay, was diagnosed in December 2017 of brain cancer, and she was gone within a month. And his son, DeLon, and I made a pact that we would climb Kilimanjaro to commemorate Madiba's 100th birthday with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, which would also be the six-month anniversary of my sister's death. And my God, Noel, I was so unfit when we made the decision. And I can't tell you how many friends and family said, you know, go climb a small hill in Drakensberg before you try this out. But I guess with my grief of losing my sister, which was a very big loss in my life in 2018, kind of gave me the fortitude, I guess, to train every day, and both wanting to make it to Madiba's 100th, as well as my sister's 6 months passing. And, you know, I managed to make it. And the first 4 days was very gentle. You know, to be honest, actually, the first 4 days I managed quite fine. The difficult bit is when you summit and you wake, you know, you walk the whole day, you get there, you go to bed at 6 p.m. and then you start climbing at 10 p.m. And the most difficult thing I found was the cold. It was so, so, so cold. But, you know, for me, Kilimanjaro is a sacred mountain. It has so much significance for the continent. And when you see, in fact, the glaciers are melting and this, and so on, when you get up there, even though we were lucky, we went in a year where the glaciers were actually pretty healthy, let's say. And you can see climate change on the top of Kilimanjaro.
Wow, wow. Another adventure that I know made you and makes you very happy is motorcycling, and your most recent motorcycling trip through the Northern Cape. Tell us about that.
Well, most people would be surprised to hear that I can even ride a motorcycle. In 2013, I landed up in hospital with severe hypertension, and some of my amazing friends in Durban, especially Clyde Pillay, who's the president of Revolution Motorcycle Club, kind of set up a lesson. I went for it and captured it. And so I don't have a car for quite some time now. And I basically use a motorcycle as a means of transportation. But I've never been to the Northern Cape, and I am also doing this work of looking at how the world of art and culture can come together. And so I was, two of my close friends were heading off to the Northern Cape on a road trip, and I went along, and it was just, and I've never been really to the Northern Cape, and it's a different place. If people have not been to the Northern Cape, I strongly recommend it. It's good for your heart and soul, and to be in open spaces in nature and so on. But I got to tell you, this has happened to me before. I haven't checked the bulletins as well as I should, because I hit the most horrendous rain and wind, and I was coming from Northern Cape to Western Cape, where I had a couple of meetings for work, and as I was coming down, like, for example, you know, on the bends, I would have to go like 30, 40 kilometers because the winds were so heavy. And then when I was hit the straights, trucks would be overtaking me around the bends. And then once we hit the straights, I get up, you know, ahead of them. And it was, and I couldn't make it, basically. I went back. But I stayed with Alfred Ekel and his partner in Okip in near Springbok, and visited with the Garage Dance Ensemble, an amazing cultural outfit that actually brings together in my head the way activism and culture and art needs to come together, what today people call artivism. The one funny thing I should tell you, though, when I was heading from Port Mollet to Cape Town, I had also arranged to do address to the Parliamentary Standing Committee on the Environment. And I remember stopping at a tea room, like a cafe, to do it because the wind was so heavy I didn't make it in time to my destination to do it properly. So I think I must have been one of the few people who addressed the Parliamentary Standing Committee with this biker jacket from a small store from a small town, with members of parliament being highly confused where I was. Anyway, but you know, those kinds of experiences that are out of the ordinary, I think, always where people take risks and do things that is outside of the comfort zone, provided there are things that make sense, I think is quite life enhancing. And I love the open doors and nature and so on. So that trip to Northern Cape, probably won't get a chance to do it again in my life, but it was one of the most special things I've done in my life, and I'm glad to have done it.
Yes, and of course, Kumi, you know, making it, bringing it right down to, you know, the simplest form of happiness, and that is when I've seen you cooking for your friends and your family and having them around you. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I owe a big debt to Jude Francis, who would end up spending years on Robben Island, and other young men, or they were young boys like I was myself in the 80s when I was living in a house father at a children's home, where I was responsible for 12 boys from the ages of 13 to 19. I myself was 19, and Jude Francis was the oldest boy, and he ended up on Robben Island as on a 60 sentence and so on. And he was one of the people who taught me to cook, as well as the whole atmosphere in the children's, in the boys' home taught me to cook again. And I have to say, it's one of the most therapeutic things that I find. I think I wish more men would explore the joy of cooking, because it kind of has such a creative element to it. Even when you get things wrong, it's okay. I get lots of things wrong. But I guess what I would recommend to people who are looking for a hobby, especially men, start cooking and start growing vegetables. Because the other thing that gives me immense joy is, you know, even when I was the head of Greenpeace and based out of Amsterdam, I made a balcony garden. And, you know, it's very cold there after a year, so I had to close the balcony and so on. And I was adding, you know, tomatoes, coriander, parsley. I even grew madumbe. Madumbe, that's that. But basically, I would say the gendered roles that we have in society, which are so unfortunate, actually sometimes means that people could be, especially men, could be living better lives by exposing themselves to certain things like gardening and cooking. And we don't. And I think it's at the detriment of our physical and emotional health.
Yeah. Talking about gender roles, because I know this one made you very, very happy. And that was when there was this very, very beautiful woman staring at you at a beach in Langebaan. Tell us about that one.
I can't believe you asked me that question. So, it's
the listeners have to hear this one, Kobe. It's a classic.
It's in the middle of lockdown. I'm in Langebaan after that trip from Northern Cape, and I'm with my good friend Noel Daniels, who takes me for a meal, and we're at a pub. I'm on a sleep deficit, and, you know, wearing masks and trying to be responsible, social distancing and so on. And so I say to Noel, there's that woman standing there looks half naked. And Noel says, no, I don't think so. And I was about to ask a waiter, hey, what's going on with that woman? Noel kind of pointed out to me, actually, Queen, that's just a statue of a mermaid. It's not a real person. But anyway, I can't believe you asked me that. But anyway, that was me.
It's a well-known landmark in Langebaan on the beach there, and it... the statue of this mermaid. I couldn't believe that Kumi actually thought it was somebody looking at him. There are so many things that we'd like to cover in the short time that we have together, Kumi. But before we go, you know, there's two very important activities that you know, you witnessed and you were part of in recent times that I'd just like to get some commentary from you on, just very quickly, because of the time constraint. The first one is about your participation in COP26 and what it was like to be part of that less than successful gathering.
So I think, firstly, the Secretary General of the United Nations put it very well. He said we must end fossil fuel subsidies, which means when governments like our government gives money to oil, coal, and gas companies, basically fossil fuel subsidies is basically taxpayers' money. We did not get a ending of fossil fuel subsidies. What we got was we must end inefficient fossil fuel subsidies with no definition of inefficient. So it means that these companies who control many of our governments, can go ahead and do what they want. The Secretary General of the UN noted that we didn't get a phase out on coal. We got a phase down on coal. It's a step in the right direction, but not fast enough, and many other things. So basically, there's a big gap between the science and where extreme weather events are on the one end, and then there's a massive gap where the politics and the economics are. So let me tell you a shocking, let me ask you a question, though. Do you know which was the largest delegation to the climate negotiations?
I'd read a bit, so I know that was the people who support the dirty industries, you know, the destructive industries.
So the largest government delegation was UK, because they were the host country and all that, with about 250 delegates. But the fossil fuel companies, that's oil, coal, and gas companies, had 503 delegates, right? Mm. Now, just to put that in context, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous having a global conference, and the largest delegation at the conference is the alcohol industry. It's absurd, right? And so right now, my optimism that I take away from what was a failure, right, is that we are pushing to keep the warming level that we do below 1.5 still, and that because we're already at 1.1 degree. I know this is a bit confusing, but 1.1 degree of warming since we started burning oil, coal, and gas, right? So that's, and then what the science says, it cannot go more than 1.5. Now think about it, we're at 1.1 now, and already we're seeing extreme weather events and so on. When we, by the time we get to 1.5, things are going to be catastrophic. In fact, I guarantee you that there are countries that will disappear if we, you know, once we get beyond 1.5. So these are small island states in the Pacific and so on. So the thing that gives me optimism is the creativity and innovation of the young people. Like they are pushing, you know, their most common slogan is system change, not climate change. And let's be very clear. What is needed to address the climate crisis is not what we saw after the global financial crisis, where leaders engaged in the process of, you know, after the financial crisis ended, it was ending, people went, the government went, system recovery more urgently needed now is system innovation, system redesign, and system transformation. And by the way, the first time I heard those words, not exactly those words, but more or less those, was from Ibrahim Patel, a minister in our government, when he was reflecting on this after the global financial crisis. But it's sad that the government in power does not follow the need for system innovation, system redesign, and system transformation. So I take optimism from the fact that young people are saying, we are not going to give up. We know that the window of opportunity is small and closing. And I even heard some young people say, even if it is too late, and even if we are going to go down as a species, we will do everything we can to make sure that those that brought us to this point are held accountable by history. So the moment that we are in is a very difficult moment. I think people, I just want to say something to parents and grandparents. If you care about your children and your grandparents, children and grandchildren, you have an obligation to become a climate activist. Understand, read, figure out what's happening. And for starters, let's make sure this project the government is trying to push in Wild Coast with the Shell doing seismic drilling. And I want to use this occasion of this interview to call to whoever listens to it, let's organize a boycott against Shell. Let's make sure that Shell does not continue to act with the impunity it acted in Nigeria, where people were killed in the Ogoni land and many other atrocities are done. All fossil fuel companies are bad, but when a company that is outstanding at going into risky places in the Arctic and the Wild Coast and so on, let's launch a campaign to make sure that we stop Shell being able to do business in South Africa. If our government wants to collude with them against the interests of our people, that's their story. But people need to stand up and resist what Charlie's doing.
Thank you, Kumi. Thank you. I just knew that we needed to use that this platform to talk about that as well. But there's one more thing that we have time to talk about, and I really don't think that we can end this interview without us raising this matter, which I know was one of the most disturbing experiences for you in your entire life, when you bore witness to what happened in Gauteng and KZN. The insurgents, as a response to Jacob Zuma's imprisonment, was happening right in front of your eyes when you were in Durban in July 2021, and the horror of it, I know, impacted on you very badly. And I really, really want to have some comment from you before we play your next song. So, Kumi, we have to end the show here, sadly. I make an undertaking to you that we will have to have you back for our next season. And the next time we'll have to make sure that we have the highest quality sound, because we can't miss a single word that it is that you have to share with us. But Kumi, just comment on your experience in July 2021 back here in South Africa. And then we'll end off with Vusi Mashashlela's Weeping.
So I'm to read the poem.
No. I don't think you should read a poem.
Okay.
We won't have time. Just tell us what your thoughts
okay, so
are
I think
around the insurgents.
For many of us who witnessed what happened in Gauteng and in KZN, a part of us died during that period. To see how opportunistic politicians could manipulate the hunger and the desperation of the poorest of South Africans, sell them a false hope, ensure that hundreds of them would get killed in stampedes, going to try and just get food to eat. And I think more than the specifics of what happened, what it tells me how bankrupt our political system is, how bankrupt our economic system is, and that what is needed right now is for young people to step forward and take leadership of this country. That my generation of activists have run out of fresh ideas, and I would say that for a country that has such a youthful population, that is not reflected in the demographic of our leadership, and that needs to start changing both in our country and on the continent. Because I believe that the only way possible is for us to be able to generate the kind of fresh vision of how we can do things differently. And let me just quickly bullet point a couple of things. Should we have a spirited conversation about the nature of our democracy in elections? I believe that the system has become highly accountable, because if you have to get ahead in politics now, it seems that to get an eye up on the list, you don't need to really organize in your constituency, in your community, and so on. You just have to try and get as far up the orifice of whether the political leader of a political party is, it would appear to me. And so we need to be asking whether there should be more constituency element to our elections rather than just having the party bosses. By the way, you'll notice none of the political parties raise issues about just, you know, where people from their community cannot elect their own MP. Because it serves the leaderships of all the political parties in our country to have the system. People, and what you saw in the local government election, people had enough of it. And at least in some communities, people organized, set up local formations, and in a few cases were able to take control of the municipalities. And right now, I would ask South Africans to ask themselves this question.
So thanks, Kumi. Those experiences that you point to loudly declare to us that the struggle's not yet over. Aluta continua.
I knew a man who lived in fear. It was huge, it was angry, it was drawing near. A secret place was the shadow of the demon he could never face. He built a wall of steel and flame and men with guns to keep it tame. And standing back, he made it clear.
So, everyone, as you've heard, Kumi's relentlessly contributes to the world and strives to make this world that we live in a better place. He truly is a brave warrior, a community champion to be revered and celebrated. Having him on Community Champions here on Bush Radio 89.5 FM tonight is indeed a momentous occasion for us, and we really do appreciate the fact that he's taken time out of his busy schedule to be with us. But unfortunately, we have to end the show here. Next week, we host another community champion who 100% fits the bill for the Day of Reconciliation, which we will be celebrating on Thursday, the 16th of December. Dr. Rudy Bass is the Executive Dean at Cornerstone Institute. He is really worth listening to. You are bound to learn something while enjoying the company of this profound man when you join us next week. This is your host for tonight, Noel Daniels, on Cornerstone CEO Chat with Community Champions. Signing off. Please join us next week. Same place, same time. Stay safe. Stay happy. Until then, ciao, everybody, and thanks for tuning in.
That was our selected community champion for this week, in conversation with Noel Daniels, CEO of Cornerstone Institute. We hope you enjoyed this last hour and that you feel inspired to go out and make a positive change in your community and society at large. Join us next week for another installment, and please visit cornerstone.ac.za to find out how you can learn to change the world.